Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Jonathan Gabay, author of Brand Psychology, Consumer Perceptions, Corporate Reputations. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
Jonathan, first and foremost, tell us a little bit about yourself, then we'll go on to the book.
Well, I've been creative director of various agencies. I was creative group head for direct marketing at Saatchi & Saatchi. I've written 14 books. I'm endorsed by the Chartered Institute of Marketing. And most importantly of all, I am a Thunderbirds fan.
So you're into Gerry Anderson?
Oh, absolutely. I actually looked at the new, you know, they've actually remade it, actually, for TV. Not bad. But I preferred the wooden puppets. But that's my only thing.
But that was the whole thing. We're showing our age now, actually, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm afraid we are, actually. But I did love Thunderbird. The movie they brought out was absolutely rubbish, one about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, move on.
Anyway, moving on from Thunderbirds, let's talk a little bit about the book. Now, there's one area that I want to drill down into, but we'll save that until you've given us like an overview of generally what the book is about.
Okay, well, generally then, what the book's about. Over the years, I've been working with really, really big brands such as EMC, Sun Microsystems, Oracle, and so on and so forth. And it's always been about measuring metrics, you know, how many people click, how many people don't click, when do they click, and all that sort of idea. And the problem is I began to realize that more and more people are being led by these mechanical, if you wish, processes rather than human processes, which is why I have always been interested in this brand psychology point of view.
Mm.
So I took an MA in psychotherapy, and I realized that sometimes people are clicking or not clicking because of reasons which have got absolutely nothing to do with any current metrics or ways of measuring these metrics. So that's what made me start thinking, well, what is it really about? And we go back to human psychology. After all, social media, we've always had social media. Around a campfire, we've had social media. And I think that people, what's happened now is that people are thinking, well, it's about the technology that leads to social media.
Mm.
Whereas I say, wrong, completely wrong, it's social media that leads to technology.
Mm.
From a human point of view.
That's fascinating. There's a particular area of the book that stuck in my mind, which I think you've called disinhibition. Is that right? Disinhibition? Have I got the wording right there?
No, disinhibition. Disinhibition.
Disinhibition.
You're like me, even though I wrote the book, the first time I spoke about it, I got that tongue twisted as well. But that's what it's actually called. That's the psychological term for it, yeah.
The reason it really struck a chord with me is because, like, it's one of those things where you kind of, you notice something in life, but you never really stop and quantify it and really think about it. And I suppose we've all witnessed or experienced people and how they behave differently when they're sort of behind the sort of cloak of the internet, because they're a bit sort of there are bits that are more difficult to trace, so people behave differently. And I found that whole area really quite fascinating. I'd like to drill down into that if I can. Just give us an overview of what it's sort of talking about.
Well, what it's talking about with online disinhibition, we got it there.
Yeah, disinhibition.
What it talks about is how people sometimes, no, I'm going to go beyond that, actually. Often they write things online which they don't truly feel. For example, there's a general election coming up in the UK.
Yeah.
And what people may say on a survey to a political party and how they will actually vote could be complete opposites. And it's an interesting thing. So why is that? And I think a lot of it, to summarize, hoping in a couple of sentences, I think a lot of it is because it's what other people, what they feel that other people would want them to say, and what they feel they would like to convey themselves as in front of these other people. Mm. And a good example was of this in the United Kingdom was a Jeremy Clarkson story.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm sure everyone or your listeners have heard about this Jeremy Clarkson thing, where, you know, you got over a million people online who were saying, you know, we must save Jeremy Clarkson. And what's interesting about that is that a week later, everyone was starting to say, well, not everyone, but the majority was starting to say, because of what the BBC had said, we shouldn't have people like Clarkson around. And it's all because, part of it is because people are kind of, it's in a way, how can I put it? It's like riding the bandwagon. It's like, well, my peers are saying this.
But it's sheep, so isn't it? Following sheep.
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit. It is like following sheep. But it's more than following sheep. It's look, I'm going to put it a different way. You know, when people take a selfie, I was at my niece's birthday party. Okay, she's 9 years old, and she had all her friends around and all that. So yeah, usual stuff. Anyway, and I noticed there at the birthday party that with all these kids, what they did is that they had their phones and they were taking selfies. And so they were taking selfies of, you know, two of them together, three of them together, whatever it might be. But they were always taking these selfies. And it occurred to me then that what's happening here is that these selfies are not really about selfies about you and the person in the picture. The selfies are about you in your own mind, how you want yourself to be perceived.
Yeah.
So if the person, if the kid is with a gang of another, you know, a kid who's into whatever it might be that they're into, then they say, oh, look, yes, I'm part of that as well. So it's much more that's going on here on a psychological point of view than just, hey, let's have a bit of fun and have a selfie.
Yeah.
It's interesting stuff. I mean, it brings you, you know, it draws you rather closer and closer to what is really going on here. And what's really going on here is, I think you can go back to Freud, actually. Now, a lot of people in psychotherapy and studying psychotherapy would say, well, you know, Freud's ideas are a bit old hat and actually have been proven wrong. And indeed, a lot of them have been proven wrong. But that said, there's still some interesting things, analogies and parallels that we can take with Freud and online stuff. When Freud created or named what was called the talking therapy, the whole idea of it was that someone would famously lie on a couch, and Freud, he was not next to them, he was actually behind them, so they couldn't see him.
Yeah.
Now, the whole point of this was that they could speak freely without being intimidated, and they could say whatever they wanted to say. And I think those are the roots of online disinhibition.
And you talk about, so that you sort of break this down into two areas, that you're the benign and the wonderful word, this iphyphallic.
Oh, yes.
Which pertains to a thing that blokes have in its sort of ready states. I think that's the most delicate way I can put that.
I think so. I think, yes, absolutely. So the iphyphallic one is about... can I put it delicately, as you said? It's about showing off. It's about saying, look at me.
Yeah,
I'm the alpha person, if you want. You know, that kind of idea. That's a mild way of putting it. And so in that one, what's happening is that they're leading the way in terms of their opinions on the internet. It's really interesting, this, that if you look at people, at people's comments on the internet, sometimes it's actually the minority's comments that actually get the biggest kind of responses. So it's because they're stirring it up.
Yeah.
That is, in a kind of a way, indicative of that kind of a person who's there saying, look at me, I want you to look at me. It's all about me, and it's all about what I think that's important. And I'll tell you what I think is important is completely contrary to what most other people think. And so that starts the conversation. Because, I mean, once people start following that person, yeah, then you get into what you were talking about, which was herd behavior and stuff like that. But you get this person who initially, or this group that initially starts, you know, pushing it a bit, and then it starts growing from there. I used to teach the Charter Institute of Marketing. One of the courses I used to teach was viral marketing. And with viral marketing, one of the stories of viral marketing was the story of Hush Puppy Shoes.
Yeah.
And Hush Puppy Shoes, what happened there? I mean, that's really going back a long time. But the story of Hush Puppy Shoes was that some kids in a part of New York, they started wearing these different types of shoes. So they were the minority.
Yeah.
And then what happened was that other people say, hey, that's cool because that's different. And so you then get into the usual product life cycle where you get, you know, innovators, laggards, and all the usual stuff. And so it starts with those people, the phallic people, and then it goes into herd behavior.
So how can online marketers sort of plug into this or ride the wave of this sort of natural human tendency to behave when they're sort of looking at things online?
The first thing to do, and I would advise this really very strongly, I mean, after 30 years of being in the business, I would advise this really, that's why I'm repeating it. It is important.
Mm-hmm.
Stop producing campaigns, which are just led by this mechanical software way of doing things, because that is not what's really going on in people's minds. And thank goodness for that, because as I said before, and I've explained it now, that people do things, say things, publish things, which are published for reasons which are not necessarily going to be reflected in any kind of big data kind of tracking device. So I would say it's time now to start thinking about big data from the point of view of the biggest brain of all, and that is the human mind. And we are not doing this at the moment. We're just going by, oh, well, it's the overwhelming numbers. And so if the overwhelming numbers are saying something, then that must be true. But clearly, it's been proven time and time and time and time again that this is not. Now, I understand a lot of marketers today, like everybody else in a lot of professions, are worried about their jobs, and they're worried about being measured and so on and so forth. And so what they're using big data for is to say, well, here is the tracking. Look, we've got so many people that were going onto this Facebook page or that tweet or whatever it might be. But actually, what's happening is it's not proving anything whatsoever. Funny enough, in a way, that in itself is an example of disinhibition. It's saying, okay, well, here the facts are proving it, so it must be right, because my peers say it must be right. But actually, it's completely wrong.
Now, let's talk about some examples. I know you've got an interesting story about Apple and these new smartwatches, haven't you?
Yeah.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's interesting. Now, Apple, it looks like, to all indications show, that Apple's changing slightly the way that they're selling.
Mm.
So their selling model, it used to be a lot of it was relying on what I call the Apple Cathedral of devotion, which are the Apple stores. So you go into the Apple Cathedral and you pay your respects to the deity that is Steve Jobs and all the rest of it. Mm. Now, the thing is what's happening now is that with the new Apple Watch, they have started pushing forward pre-orders for this watch before it's, you know, actually in the actual Apple store itself. In fact, we know that even 8 months prior to the event, or maybe slightly more, actually, I can't remember, 8 or 9 months, something like that, we had the first peek at the watch. And nobody at that point was thinking, well, why are they showing us a peek at the watch now? Because usually with Apple, you know what Apple's like, they make a big hullabaloo about, you know, a new phone or whatever it might be, and then they launch it and everyone wonders what it's going to be. And then within a week or whatever it might be, it's in the Apple Cathedral. Now, this time, though, it's all been online. It's all been about building up expectations online, but selling it online. So what happens now is that it's not just about touching and feeling it, although it will be out there. And indeed, a lot of Apple stores are putting in displays which are just for the watch. But in addition to that, it's about people talking about it, and saying to people, I have already pre-ordered my watch because I'm ahead of the technological curve and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so we go back to what I was saying before, which is, you know, reflecting what you think other people are going to think about you. So it's a bit like this. It's a bit like this. I'll give you a different way of looking at this.
Mm.
Let's go away from the internet for a second, and I'll tell you a true story. As a brand journalist, because a lot of magazines and so on and so forth asked me to write for them, I get invited, like as you do, to press launches and all the rest of it. And most of the time, I can't be bothered to go.
Mm.
However, there was once a time that Armani invited me to some launch of something or other, and it was in London near Knightsbridge. And I thought, between you and me and your listeners, so let's not spread it anywhere else, okay? Keep this to the family. But I thought, I'll go along because I might get a free tie out of them. You know, they give these good goodie bags. So anyway, so I went along. I listened to a boring speech about, well, to be honest, you can't even remember what it was about. All I was thinking of, what's going to be in that press goodie bag? I got the goodie bag, and in it was some boring brochure. A bag looked very nice, had some rope on it instead of a four handle and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no tie, no perfume, no nothing. And I thought, you know, what a swizz. So anyway, I went around the corner. I had nothing to do for 20 minutes. I went around the corner and I went to Harrods because that was around the corner where that place was. Anyway, so I'm looking in Harrods and I go and just look around and I thought to myself, this is a really great place because everyone, all the salespeople were very attentive to me.
Yeah.
And they were saying, you know, how are you? Good morning, sir. And da, da, da. And I thought, you know, maybe, you know, from a branding point of view, this is really what Harrods, why they've got such a great name. Anyway, 6 months later, I was in the area again, wanted to kill 20 minutes or so. So I just did a bit more, if you like, window shopping sort of thing in Harrods. So I went back to exactly the same department. And I kind of recognized the salespeople there. Didn't recognize me, of course, but I kind of recognized the salespeople there. But this time, nobody approached me at all. And the only difference between this time and the former time was that in the former time I was carrying that Armani bag, shopping bag, and this time I was carrying a Sainsbury's bag. So what's happening here is that it's saying, from a branding point of view, even the shopping bag, okay, it's saying, this is who I am. This is where I, you know, the brand I invest in. But it's also saying stories to myself. It's saying, this is who I want you to think I am. And it's also saying, this is what I want to be. And so all of these sorts of things come into play when it comes to this idea of people acting, reacting, and dealing online. So there's more to it than being led by a dumb computer, however it is looking at the metrics. It is time, it really is time, to start looking at the cognitive web rather than just big data.
Yeah, so I guess when we're online, we need to have the online version of an Armani bag.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you are absolutely right. And in the online version of the Armani bag, going back to the Apple Watch, for some people will be, hey, look at me, I've got all the Apple stuff.
Yeah.
Or another one. Look, here's another one. Last night, my brother-in-law usually lives in Los Angeles. Anyway. Last night, he's flying back today, funnily enough. But anyway, last night, we went over there for dinner to my mother-in-law's. And he was saying to me, hey, are you a Star Wars fan? And I said, well, you know, take it, leave it. And he said, well, look at this. And so he started showing me all these clips of the future Star Wars film that's coming out, okay, at the end of the year. And the thing is that you had their clips also of other fans who had made their own preview of this film, even though no one's actually seen the film yet. And it was about who could get more unofficial pieces of footage in their previews of the film than somebody else. Mm. So in other words, the story that they were saying is, I'm a bigger, and therefore, and here comes a big A word, and this is really important, I'm a bigger and therefore more authentic fan than you are. So yeah, people are looking for this idea of authenticity, and for other people to say, yeah, he, she, they, this group, this is the real thing. Because people, because we're living in an overpopulated planet, people are looking, and it's getting increasingly worse, people are looking for some type of identity, some type of meaning, some type of purpose, and they're looking for the tools that show other people, and indeed themselves, as I was talking about, you know, it's also talking to yourself, that you are, that they are authentic. And that's why so many things, I mean, going even wider than this, I mean, seeing that we're just shooting the breeze here a little bit, but going even wider than this, that's why I believe, from a psychology point of view, you have such an increase in fundamentalism as well, because people are looking for ways to say to themselves, look, I can see what's going on in the world. Job prospects aren't what they were. Housing prospects aren't what they were, and so on and so forth. And I need something that I can hook onto that gives me a sense of purpose and authenticity. Now, whether I agree with that, their purpose or authenticity is irrelevant to this argument. What is relevant, though, is that it is something that is happening today, and that unless we as brands, we as a society, we as a culture, understand this human psyche, I'm afraid it's going to get even worse.
Well, on that lovely high note, let's just summarize if we can, because we need to, online marketers need to be aware of this sort of shift in the psyche, if you like. I mean, just in summary, what should we be doing to market in the right way for this?
Well, to answer that, I'm going to go back to 2007. In 2007, there was a book that came out, which was called The Black Swan, not to be confused with the movie, which is a great movie, but it has absolutely nothing to do with that. And it was by a professor called Nassim Nicholas Taleb. Yeah. And what he did is that he looked at why people make decisions. Yeah. Mm. He looked at making decisions from the point of view of doing all your calculations, opinion polls, software, whatever it might be, yeah, so that you're going to make the right decision. So in other words, all this big data kind of stuff, although this was a prelude to big data as we understand it today. Mm. All right. Now, what's really interesting about Taleb, and he studied this all his life, this kind of area, is that he found in most cases that when people, right, who had experience of whatever the subject was, you've got to have experience of the subject, but when people who had experience of the subject, when they went by their gut feeling as opposed to what the computer says or whatever, most cases, their gut feeling was right, mm-hmm. and the official metrics were wrong.
Okay.
Now, that is really interesting. It's time for us, I think it's time for marketers, it's time for businesses to say, yes, okay, we'll look at the big data, but let's also give ourselves a little bit of credit in terms of common sense, and let's do things in terms of a human instinct. Otherwise, what happens is that you get what happening in the last 2 years in Hollywood is that you get every film that comes out, because one film of a genre such as superheroes, right, was successful. It's just like every single film that comes out is now a superhero film because the metric said, oh, well, the audiences went to see that. And so what happens is that you're being ruled by the computer rather than the computer following your lead. And when that happens, we've got bigger problems in terms of metrics. We've got problems which have got to do with the Matrix, but that's a completely different conversation.
The Matrix versus the metrics.
Absolutely.
Well, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us and talking us through your book. So let's finish off. Tell us a little bit about how can people find your book and a little bit about how they can follow you online.
Okay, well, they can find the book. It's called Brand Psychology by me, Jonathan Gabay, Gabay. You can find it, I'm sure, at Amazon and all the usual places like that. And in terms of following me, I'm Jonathan Gabay at Twitter. And you can also find me at Jonathan Gabay. And if you want to find more about the actual book itself, get some clips about interesting bits and bobs to do with the book, including hopefully I'll be putting your clip on here, on there as well, so that I'll be pushing you as well.
Thank you.
It's going to be on brandunderstanding.com. You go to brandunderstanding.com, you'll find more links to the show over there.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And thank you to our listeners for listening. You can find the show notes, as usual, at sitevisibility.com/IMpodcast. Don't forget, we're on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to leave a review, that would be great. Two ways you can contact us. The email is podcast@sitevisibility.co.uk. And we have a telephone hotline, +44 1273 256 150. So that's all from me, Andy, and it's all from Jonathan.
Bye. Yeah, take care.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.